Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we've got some exciting news for El Cajon about Live Nation possibly taking over the management of the East County Performing Arts Center and getting it finally reopened. On our Capitol Report, we'll tell you about the confirmation of a key cabinet official for Donald Trump. Then we'll have the latest on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision on Donald Trump's travel ban affecting refugees and immigrants from 9 Muslim nations. Our newsmaker interview today is feminist activist Bonnie Price, and we'll be talking about women's issues. And finally, on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the fun festivals and events coming up across our region, from Valentine's Day happenings to Black History Month commemorations. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is Miriam Raftery with some big news from East County. The long-shuttered East County Performing Arts Center may finally be reopened under management of Live Nation, which claims to be the global leader in live entertainment. According to the company's website, Live Nation operates in 37 countries and has a concert somewhere in the world every 20 minutes. El Cajon's City Council will vote on Tuesday, February 14th, at its 3 p.m. meeting on authorizing the city manager to negotiate a draft management agreement with Live Nation. The company currently manages or books talent for many other San Diego County venues, including Harrah's Rincon Casino, House of Blues, Humphreys, Pechanga Casino, Balboa Theater, Valley View Casino, Viejas Arena, and Aztec Bowl at San Diego State. The theater, which seats 1,100 people and has among the best acoustics of any local theater, has been closed since December 2009 and needs extensive repairs, including a new roof and access for the disabled. Councilman Gary Kendrick says this has been worth the wait, adding that Live Nation is a big outfit and everything they touch turns to gold. He adds, "We know that we're going to have to subsidize the theater and put $2 to $4 million into fixing it up, but this will be huge for downtown." Ray Lutz, founder of Citizens Oversight and Save ECPAC, a group that helped save the theater from being torn down and replaced by a hotel several years ago, voiced enthusiasm when told that Live Nation is interested in managing and reopening the facility. He told us, "This is a world-class theater management company, and this is going to be the best thing that ever happened to El Cajon." Lutz anticipates Live Nation will bring in headliner acts that will draw audiences from across the county and put El Cajon on the map, in his words. If the council does vote on February 14th to pursue negotiations with Live Nation for management that could reopen the theater and bring back those top acts that the public and downtown business owners have long clamored for, members could provide a heartfelt Valentine's Day gift to the community. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
For the first time in America's history, a vice president had to cast the deciding vote on a president's cabinet nominee. Betsy DeVos was confirmed 51-50 as Secretary of Education, with all Democrats voting no, along with two Republicans, Senators Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Trump tweeted before Vice President Mike Pence cast the deciding vote, "Betsy DeVos is a reformer, and she's going to be a great education secretary for our kids." DeVos, a billionaire heiress to the Amway fortune, has drawn criticism for her support of vouchers, for-profit charters, and use of taxpayer funds to allow students to attend private religious schools. In Detroit, her reform program has been a failure, resulting in no significant improvement in test scores, but an increase in racial segregation of public schools, the Washington Post reported. 80% of Michigan's charter schools are now for-profit private schools, raising serious questions about affordability. DeVos has no background as an educator and has not attended public schools, nor sent her children through the public school system. She has pushed for stronger ties between churches and schools. At her confirmation hearing, She refused to affirm that she would support enforcement of federal laws protecting disabled students and female students from sexual assaults. Of the 50 Republicans who voted for DeVos, at least 21 took hefty campaign contributions from her, ranging from $8,000 to over $101,000, FCC records reveal. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
In a unanimous verdict, a three-judge panel on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled against President Donald Trump's travel ban. That means that admission to the U.S. has now resumed for refugees and immigrants who are citizens of seven Muslim nations, as well as green card holders with permanent residency. In their decision, the judges wrote, "The government has pointed to no evidence that any alien from any of the countries named in the order has perpetrated a terrorist attack in the United States. Rather than present evidence to explain the need for the executive order, the government has taken the position that we must not review its decision at all. We disagree," the judges wrote. The unanimous decision is a stinging rebuke to the president, who had asserted that only the president has the power to determine who shall enter our nation or not. The judges include a Republican appointee and two Democratic appointees, and all found that the court system has a right to review such decisions and upheld a temporary stay ordered by a federal judge who is also a Republican appointee. Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson filed the suit challenging the ban, and he said, "Bottom line, this is a complete victory for the state of Washington," adding that the Ninth Circuit ruling effectively granted everything we sought. Trump issued an angry response on Twitter, posting in all caps, "See you in court. The security of our nation is at stake." The judges did not rule on the merits of the government's core arguments on national security, instead finding that the hastily drafted broad ban would cause irreparable harm to many people and that the Justice Department failed to prove a compelling need for urgency. The court allowed the injunction halting the ban to stay in place while the case works its way through the lengthy legal process. The state of Washington argued the travel ban tore families apart and left travelers stranded, including state university students. A friend of the court brief filed by 97 companies, including giants such as Amazon and Microsoft, argued that the ban caused harm to their businesses, including recruitment efforts and barring employees overseas from returning to the U.S. The court noted that the ban raises significant constitutional questions over a violation of the clause prohibiting establishment of religion. While Trump has denied that this is a Muslim ban, the court noted the state has presented numerous examples of Trump declaring his intent to impose a Muslim ban which would be discriminatory. Next up, Trump could ask the full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that's all nine judges, to reconsider the stay, or he could ask the Supreme Court to intervene on an emergency basis. The High Court is currently split 4-4, however, between liberal and conservative justices due to the vacancy left by death of Anthony Scalia, and it would take 5 votes to overturn the appeals court decision, which experts believe Trump is not likely to get currently. Even if his Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch is confirmed by the Senate before the case reaches the High Court, it's far from clear whether the court would rule in Trump's favor, since even conservative judges have already ruled against the ban. Judges may also seek to rein in executive overreach, as they did with President Obama, particularly given Trump's attacks on judges, including a tweet denigrating the trial court judge, who was a Bush appointee, as a so-called judge, and another tweet suggesting judges should be blamed if any terror attack occurs due to the court's decision. Another option would be to rescind the ban entirely and issue a new executive order, more narrowly crafted, in an effort to withstand a legal challenge. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, on the heels of the historic Women's March, we're going to be talking about women's issues. And my very special guest today is Bonnie Price. Bonnie is a Spring Valley resident, a lifelong feminist, an activist in the women's movement, and the past president of the East County Democratic Club, as well as an activist from the Hillary Clinton campaign for president. Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam. I relish the opportunity to speak up for women, just as we spoke up at our worldwide march for women's rights.
Yes, which attracted nearly 3 million people worldwide by the last count, and around 40,000, some say even 100,000 here in San Diego. But Bonnie, can you explain to our listeners what your reasons were for participating in the march?
My reasons for participating were many. Of course, the election situation with regard to Hillary Clinton was a primary motivator for me. I understand the Electoral College, as I'm a political scientist, but her popular vote exceeded the incumbent president's vote by 2.8 million plus, and I thought it was an awful result that she couldn't become president because of our archaic Electoral College system.
And you've indicated it's more than just the Electoral College system, that while we've had a lot of talk about did the Russians hack things or were people upset about Hillary Clinton's emails, you have an interesting theory that it wasn't the emails, it was?
Well, it was the white males. And I took that from a sign I saw in the parade.
Interesting. So really you're saying there's some misogyny there, that there's still that prejudice, so to speak, against women in politics.
Of course. We have institutionalized sexism, and all you have to do is look at institutions like the federal government, where most of the representatives in Congress and in the Senate are men, and they make rules regularly about women's rights, and they try consistently to take them away. And they've done it in many states, and it's not just the government, it's also religious institutions, some of which prohibit women from serving as pastors and priests.
Yeah. We're certainly seeing a wave of states that have been passing restrictions on abortion, but also restrictions on access to birth control and all kinds of women's health services, whether that might be mammograms or, pap smears, things that really can save women's lives. And I think there's also a sense among the young women. I saw a lot of young women this time. Some of them, it was their very first march, and they were participating with their mothers and their grandmothers. And, I had one who said her great-grandmother used to march for women's rights, and they just can't believe they're having to do this again. Didn't we solve things like, access to birth control a century ago, and yet it's still being fought out in the halls of Congress?
Yes, and the halls of Congress also, in fighting women's rights and access to birth control and health care choices that they make on their own, in those very same halls of Congress, they pass laws that favor men in their health care decisions, including allowing the federal government to pay for Cialis and Viagra.
Yeah.
If there's anything we don't need, is more children produced. We have too many people in the world already, and it's part of what's killing our planet.
Now, speaking of that issue, which is a global issue, this goes beyond the U.S. borders, in what seems like a slap in the face to the millions of women who were marching for women's rights on Saturday, on Monday, Donald Trump issued an executive order banning the U.S. government from funding any nonprofit organization anywhere in the world that provides abortion. And it isn't just blocking the money for abortion itself, which is controversial enough. It's blocking money for any services. So if you have a group that's, let's say it's a country where there's heavy Zika virus and it's very dangerous for a woman to get pregnant, her child, could die or be left brain damaged and blind and deaf for life, they would not be allowed to fund an organization that provides birth control, for example, or health screenings for women, or, prenatal care, or, care for these infants that could be damaged. Do you see sort of a hypocrisy in that? I mean, it would seem to me that if somebody is pro-life and they really care about unborn babies, shouldn't they care about the babies that may be born damaged and taking care of women's health so that they can prevent a pregnancy like that?
Well, it's odd you should mention this particular situation, because you're assuming by what you say that members of Congress actually understand biology. And many of them have no idea at all what happens. And maybe they even deny the science of biology.
Yeah, we've heard these stupid statements. I'm going to say it. It's stupid. When we hear a member of Congress, as one of them did, talk about rape and suggest that if a woman resisted, she wouldn't get pregnant. These are completely false statements that somehow are used to justify, for example, not allowing the morning after pill, say for a rape victim or something like that.
Yes, ignorance breeds more ignorance, and institutionalized sexism just enhances that further. What we need to do is have the members of Congress and state legislatures realize that there are choices that are not really theirs to make. Women do most of the work on child care and after birth, of course. They put most of their energy into the child's actual growth as a human being. But after they're born, they do most of the child care and acculturation. If it weren't for women being able to do this work, who would do it? The men certainly wouldn't do it. They need to think about reality. Many of them have no idea what goes into raising a child. They have no idea that it's not just as easy as women make it look. So what we need to do is educate them and, in addition, set up a Bill of Rights for women that includes control over their own choices for health care.
You're talking like a constitutional amendment, maybe, so that women's health wouldn't be at the whim of every political administration.
Yes, but constitutional amendments come very hard, as we found when we were trying to get the Equal Rights Amendment passed.
Which never did get ratified.
No.
Fell a couple of states short there. You have been involved in your lifetime in helping establish a Planned Parenthood, I understand, Bonnie, which, of course, was in the news a lot last year in some controversial ways over, you know, tapes about late-term abortions at one particular Planned Parenthood clinic out of many. But for listeners that may not be familiar with everything that Planned Parenthood does and the importance that it plays in the roles of women and their families, especially in some rural areas where there may not be easy access to other healthcare clinics, can you educate listeners a little bit about what they may not have heard about Planned Parenthood?
Oh, yes. It's one of my favorite topics. I lived in Pennsylvania for a while, and during my time there, I was not only active in politics, but I helped set up one of the 20 largest Planned Parenthoods in terms of area in the country, in northeast Pennsylvania. We covered 9 counties in northeast Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Many of those counties were old open pit coal mines.
Wow.
And people were out of work. Jobs will never go back there, mainly because there's just nothing there to produce. And in many towns, we were the only health care in town. Mothers brought their children, brought their husbands. They got all kinds of family care that they would not get.
Really? So it's not only women that relied on the Planned Parenthood clinics for health care. It was men and children also.
Oh, yes. And in our urban areas, we had outreach workers going to schools, teaching the young about use of birth control. And at the time, it was, we had a severe outbreak of HIV.
Mm.
And people were in need of birth control, condoms, to protect themselves. In fact, some of our pastors who were involved with our Planned Parenthood were actually handing out condoms in church because they wanted to save lives.
Now, speaking of churches, you were telling me a story before we went on the air about a church that was maybe going over the line in politics in terms of recommending, again, a male candidate over a female one. Tell us about that.
Well, it happens all the time in certain places. It can be, it's usually Protestant, but Catholics do it too. From the pulpit, they say to their parishioners, vote for a certain candidate. And for them, Donald Trump, whom I consider a sexual predator, was recommended over a woman who has done nothing but work for human rights, children's rights, girls and women's rights. They recommended a man who has been charged and
who has boasted, we should say, of what amounts to sexual assault in most states, of groping women, grabbing women by their private parts without their consent.
Yes.
As well as making very derogatory statements, denigrating women's appearances. Anybody who criticizes them, whether it's, you know, Roseanne Barr or
Carly Fiorina. Oh.
Yeah, his Republican opponent. Look at that face, he said. Yeah.
Judging women by their appearance is part of the institutionalization of sexism, misogyny.
Yeah, it seems like it's a very disturbing message for a president to be sending to the young people of America, to our daughters and to our sons. Is this the way that we want them to be treating women?
Yes, indeed. And strong men do not fear strong women, and they don't necessarily look at women only as sex objects. They look at them as life companions.
Yeah. So
they were marching in the parade on Saturday.
There you go. There you go. And one day after, we should note, after Donald Trump's administration took office and promptly took off things like equal pay and civil rights off of the White House website, LGBT rights, all those sections just vanished right off of the website.
And now the website consists of boasting about the prowess of Donald Trump. It's fascist to be using a public means of communication solely to boost the power and influence of a single individual.
Yeah, very, very, very troubling. Another thing that, of course, has concerned many feminists is that Donald Trump now has the power to appoint what could be the swing vote on the Supreme Court on cases such as reversing Roe versus Wade, the historic decision in 1973 that legalized the right to abortion, particularly in the early stages. It did give states some rights to regulate, you know, the later in the pregnancy that it was. And many states have carried that to the extreme now of passing legislation that may not currently be constitutional, that basically has completely eliminated access to abortion by finding ways to shut the clinics down and so forth. And yet, will a Trump administration even try to enforce those laws? I would like to ask you, Bonnie, as someone of an older age group than many of our listeners may be, do you remember back, were you involved in the feminist movement back before abortion was legal in America?
Indeed, and I was a college professor, and I had to assist young women who were choosing to have an abortion. The only safe, legal way to get it in Pennsylvania, where I was working at the time, was to make a connection with a group of pastors called the Clergy Consultation and give them the name and contact information of young women who wanted safe legal abortions. And the only way they could get it was to go to a hospital in Philadelphia where they had to have three physicians, including one psychiatrist, certify that they should have an abortion so that their mental health would be protected.
That was before Roe versus Wade?
Yes.
So it was legal in some states under certain limited conditions back then. And, of course, other states, it was completely illegal.
And it was very costly to get a safe legal abortion.
So if you were rich, you could afford it, and if you were poor, maybe not.
Right.
The women who might need it the most, arguably.
Yeah, it cost $800 in pre-Roe versus Wade. That was prior to 1973.
I'm old enough to remember that there were many cases in San Diego County here of women who literally died because they would go south to Tijuana. You know, we're a border community, and even though abortion was illegal nationally, that didn't mean you couldn't go over the border and risk your life in often very unsanitary conditions. UCLA had an awful lot of patients that they treated who bled to death or had infections and were never able to have children after that because of getting illegal abortion. So banning it doesn't necessarily prevent women from getting it, but it does certainly make it much more dangerous for the women and for their future children.
Exactly. And legislators do not think about the possibility of having their own wife or their own daughter have the need for a legal abortion. That is the legislators who are trying to restrict it.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about, you know, when we say need for abortion, I can hear, almost envision some people cringing at that and saying, well, wait a minute, you know, it's the taking of a life in the opinion of many people. But there's also the mother's life to consider. And I know I personally have known women who had pregnancies that were life-threatening for the mother had they been continued. I worked with a young woman who had an ectopic pregnancy, which is where the egg becomes embedded in the tube. And if you don't abort, the tube bursts. The woman very often will die. And if not, she may be left sterile and never have another child. It's very, very dangerous. And actually, one in every 50 to 100 pregnancies in the U.S. is a tubal pregnancy. People don't realize that. And that's per Bush administration's health department statistics. That's not from some liberal, you know, Obama administration statistics. So that's just one example. I had another, you know, friend who had such extreme high blood pressure that they warned her that carrying a pregnancy to term could kill her. She actually chose to take the risk and thank goodness had a healthy baby. But what if that had gone the other way? You know, so I guess the bottom line is, do we really want to take away the choice of women? Not only where it might be a healthy mother, healthy baby situation, but what if it's an unhealthy mother or an unhealthy baby? I had another friend where she got the very bad news at 7 months that her baby had all of the organs growing on the outside of the body, a hole in the heart. This was not a baby that could be saved. And yet, if these laws go through, someone like that would be forced to carry that to term.
Yes. Yes, and I can think of numerous cases since I was so involved with Planned Parenthood.
Could you share one or two?
Well, there was one that was a friend of mine who was a good Catholic nurse, went all the way through Catholic school, including nursing school. Mm-hmm. Her husband abused her, and out of one of these abusive encounters they had, she became pregnant for the fourth time. She already had one child with fetal alcohol syndrome, and because she was becoming an alcoholic to try to deal with her abuse, and she called me and said, I'm pregnant. I don't want this. I can't handle it. And I said, well, get yourself an abortion if you think you need that. And I will support you. It's your choice. Mm-hmm. She talked to her physician who worked at a Catholic hospital where she also worked. He referred her to a hospital across town that was secular. She got her abortion, and she said it's the best decision she ever made. So she did not bring into the world another child with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yes, sometimes it's a matter of really the lesser of two evils, because obviously there's severe consequences, you know, to a child in either of those scenarios. So it really boils down to who should be making that decision. Should it be the government, or should it be the mother, the family? You know, the advice of the doctor in these very, very, very heart-wrenching situations. And then we have the situations of very young children that are raped. I did an interview at a national conference on family violence, ironically on 9/11, you know.
Oh.
And, you know, there were these heartbreaking stories. There was a young girl who had been raped repeatedly by her father, and the courts wouldn't believe her and gave custody back to him, and she couldn't get away until she was 18. She got pregnant by her own father, and this was in one of these southern states where there's a waiting list, and the court wouldn't believe her, and she couldn't get the abortion. So she actually had a child of incest. Others, they talk about these sad stories of 12-year-old girls who were physically just too small to even safely give birth, some of them, who'd been raped. Often it was incest, and where it was very dangerous, and they would have to have a cesarean section if they, you know, if they carried it through. So these are just things that we should think about. I'm not the moral police. I'm not going to cast judgment on a decision that anybody makes in those situations. But, you know, it certainly seems that just this blanket saying, I'm pro-life, but you're not thinking about the lifelong impact on a woman, on the other children in the family, you know, on her future ability to have healthy children, maybe, or on her very life. These are things that should also be weighed, I think, when we consider these kinds of laws.
And the big issue that's never really addressed here is that a lot of these legislators who want to take away women's rights on this issue are, in effect, foisting their particular brand of religion on those who do not necessarily share it. We're supposed to have freedom of religion in this country, not embody in our laws the religion of a particular set of believers.
Very true. It should be noted that abortion is not considered a sin in some religions. So there's also a hypocrisy element. I remember when I worked in Sacramento, there was a legislator up there, John Schmitz, right-winger, card-carrying John Birch Society member, and he was one of the leaders of the anti-abortion movement up there. And it came out that this married man with kids had a mistress and that he'd gotten her pregnant, and it turned out she was physically abusing the baby. And he justified this by saying, well, at least I didn't make her get an abortion.
Wow.
And yet, here he was, you know, passing judgment on other people when he was doing something that many people would consider to be very immoral.
Of course.
You know, so it's kind of sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, but he just, I just thought that was tremendously hypocritical, that if you expect everybody else to lead a moral life, to not have sex outside of marriage, you know, unless you're willing to have an unborn baby, an out-of-wedlock baby to care for, by banning abortion, banning access to birth control, all of these things, then maybe you should be setting an example yourself in how you conduct your own lives. And a lot of these guys aren't doing that, you know. We look at Trump himself, who boasted on Howard Stern's show and other places about his infidelities and, you know, cheated on one wife with the future wife and so forth.
Yes, morality is in the eye of the beholder, evidently. Those who preach most frequently about morality as legislators often have none themselves. And I say that in a blanket statement because if you look at many of them, they are doing the same things that you just described.
Yeah. Well, Bonnie, what's the takeaway from all of this? I know that a lot of people have felt frustrated, afraid, powerless maybe, in light of Trump's election. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there who voted for him, who agree for him, who agree with him, who think he's going to make America great again. But for those who don't and who are concerned about women's issues and some of these other things, and you've mentioned, by the way, that that really every issue is a woman's issue. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, I want to quote Senator Kamala Harris, who said at the March on Washington, in Washington, D.C. on Saturday.
Yeah, California's newly elected senator, replacing Barbara Boxer, who retired.
Yes, and our former attorney general for 8 years. She said, when people talk to her about women's issues, she said, yes, I'll talk to you about women's issues. Let's start with economic issues, because women need equal pay for equal work, because they support families, and they need to have good education systems, because their children go to those schools. And any other issue you can think of is a woman's issue. Women hold up half the sky. That's from the Indians, our Aboriginal friends here.
I love that quote.
And we do hold up half the sky. We just don't get recognized for all the work that we do. Mm-hmm. A lot of women's work is not paid. we still haven't arrived at the place where we allow women to take time out to have a child and properly start it off. In Britain, where my daughter lives, her first 6 months, she had time free to raise her child, begin the child's growth on a proper basis, and she got a regular stipend from the British government.
Wonderful.
And I can't recommend their system highly enough. I think it's the way it should be.
Some countries also give men time off when a child is born so that they can bond with the father and the father can spend time at home helping the mother. I'm sure everyone who's raised a child would appreciate that.
Oh, yes. It's very tiring, very hard on a woman, first of all, to have a child. Mm-hmm. This is established by those in the obstetrics profession. They say that women's bodies are not properly evolved to handle a lot of childbirth, and it does take a lot of energy to feed a child in utero, and especially male children. It takes a half year off of every woman's life if she has a son.
No kidding.
No kidding. So every son you have is 6 months less for a woman to live.
So you're saying boys are more of a handful than girls.
More uterus full. Yes. It's very demanding on women's body.
Fascinating. I'd never heard that one before.
And Leonard Schlain wrote several books about women's issues and healthcare. He's a surgeon from San Francisco, and I just love his way of looking at life. He's a very feminist man, and he has made quite a name for himself, speaking out just from the standpoint of a physician regarding a woman's life as a mother and with an infant in utero.
Standing up for women's rights is really something that all of us can do on an individual basis as well as collectively on a massive nationwide or global basis. I'm going to just share an anecdote or two from my own life and those people I've known. I once worked for a woman who, back in the day here, she was one of the early women executives at a company in San Diego, and you know, she was just tired of the old boys club. They would all go down to a certain bar and hang out and have these networking meetings, and women weren't allowed. And she was quite a formidable woman physically, with kind of a steamroller kind of a personality. And one day she and a couple of other women just went in there, and they just decided they weren't going to stand for this anymore. And they sat down, and much like the black people who integrated diners in the South by refusing to leave, that's pretty well what they did. And forever after, that was integrated, and women got to be part of what had been the old boys' network. I worked at a job in a music store when I was only 18, 19 years old. And I was told, even though I'd had 10 years of piano lessons at the time, honey, the girls work in the sheet music and records department, and the men sell the pianos and organs, which, of course, was the commission sales where you actually made the money. And thankfully, we had a rather enlightened, younger assistant manager who told me there was no reason I couldn't learn this. And he taught me how to write credit applications and how to take a piano apart and show all the parts inside. And one day, boy, it's coming down rain. If, listeners, if you're wondering, we've got quite a hailstorm going on outside our studio. So we'll just keep going. Bear with us. But one day, the men were all out delivering pianos just before Christmas. Someone came in and wanted to buy an organ for his family for Christmas, his wife, and I sold it to him. And when the manager got back and I presented him the check, he just turned purple, and you could tell he was furious. You can't do that. I said, well, no problem. I'll call the customer. I'll just tear this check up, and I'll call the customer back and tell him that, you know, you don't want women selling to him, and, you know, I guess we just lose the sale because it needed to be delivered tonight. And he looked right at me, and he said, oh, all right. So, you know, they pocketed the couple $1,000 from that sale, and after that, he decided I could be the first woman salesperson in that company. And next thing you know, I was partnering up with him to, because he didn't play the piano. He could sell, but he couldn't play. And he would call me over, and we would split the sales at first, and then pretty soon I was making them on my own. And after that, they started hiring women in the commission sales department. So we all need to just stand up for injustice.
Yes, we do.
When we see it.
Women can do anything if they want to and if they're allowed to. I, as a political scientist of a certain age, I can tell you I hardly ever had a woman political scientist in my graduate school years. In fact, I had one professor take me out to the faculty club after my class, first class in my master's level, and he said, "Now, why would a married woman want to learn more political science at the graduate level?"
Oh.
And I said, "Well, because I'm curious. I want to learn as much as I can."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, I think it's very odd that you do that."
Yeah. So those of us that have been through that era where we just had to fight for what women today really take for granted, we see the potential for the clock to be rolled back on women's rights, which is way more than reproductive rights. That's one part of the equation, but it's just, you know, everything else, equality in the workplace, equal pay, all of these different things, the right to vote even, which has only been around, you know, for less than a century right now. What's the takeaway, Bonnie, for all the women out there who marched in the march, and maybe others who didn't but wished they had? How can they stay involved, stay informed, and be active in standing up collectively for the rights of women in this current administration?
Well, those who went on the march, of course, are connected with the Women's March in Washington. And
which has a website, right?
Yes, you can go to the website and see what they recommend. But I'm one who says to myself, okay, I just heard Congress is attempting to do a certain thing that I do not like. Mm-hmm. I am calling my members of Congress.
Yeah, the Women's March, on their webpage they've announced they're going to be putting forth a series of actions. I believe they're saying, you know, an action every week or every 10 days, something like that, that they're collectively urging everybody to take. And it won't be only women's issues. It might be a civil rights issue or something else. So you can certainly pick and choose, but they're saying that if everybody got involved, and that means contacting their members of Congress and their senator every week on at least one issue collectively, the voices could be very, very large. Because when Congress operates in the dark, in the vacuum, before the era of social media, you were much less apt to see things, you know, put through that maybe weren't in the interests of a lot of the American people. And now, if there's hope, I think we saw it with this ethics vote where Congress, a couple weeks ago, they were going to vote to gut the ethics commission. They actually did vote to gut the ethics commission that oversees ethics in Congress. And there was such an outcry and, you know, zillions of people calling and emailing and faxing their members of Congress voicing outrage that they backed down and they changed that vote and they undid that. So there is some hope that even with single party control right now of everything, if people speak out enough, things can change.
Yes, and there's a guide put out by former staffers called Indivisible, and you can get it online. Go to the website, Indivisible, and you can get a make it your own copy, mm-hmm. and then put that into action as well.
Another thing is the issue of more women running for office. You know, I've heard a lot of women say they are sick and tired of men deciding on laws that affect women so much. What's being done to recruit more women to run for political office, Bonnie?
I'm part of a group in San Diego County that has championed women to run for office for quite a while now. It's called Run Women Run. We reach out and find women who will be pro-choice and run for office.
Mm-hmm.
We also have League of Women Voters, and they encourage women to learn and get involved in political action.
Yeah, they actually have a lot of good educational information about the different issues and
yes.
where different politicians stand, so you can look it up and find out how your member of Congress is voting, or your state legislator, for that matter.
Yes, and the Democratic Party is very supportive of women candidates. Now, if you look at East County this past fall general election, unfortunately, we only had 32% of our candidates who ran or won as women. And a lot of the mega churches there do not believe that women should be running for office. So we have an entrenched sexist organization, or set of them, who discourage women from even disobeying their husbands.
Yeah, I think it's very disturbing to me that something as fundamental as women's rights too often has become a partisan issue. It shouldn't be. Shouldn't everybody be supportive of women's rights on some level? But we seem to see a lot of misogyny sometimes in the local party. I've even seen it where the Republican Party had very prominent, very well-respected women in their own party, business leaders, Chamber of Commerce leaders, people who had put in their dues for their party, and yet when they turned around to run for office, they'd go and endorse some man who had zero experience. I can think of one example of a chamber leader who'd run for office before, had served on city councils. And when she turned around to run for another local council, they were endorsing a man whose only real qualification was he was a church buddy of the council member that was retiring with no political experience. And it just seemed to be so sexist to me.
It is. Women actually do work harder at their jobs, even if they're part-time when they get elected.
Very often that's the case. I hate stereotyping, but it is often the case.
Well, there are so few of them. They're very visible. In order to run for office, you really have to have a strong ego and be able to take a lot of punches, some of which are not deserved at all.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be able to deal with the issues and with the negative comments made about you. Women, for example, are considered too aggressive if they decide to stand up and say no.
Yeah. They'll use the B word.
Yes.
Right.
And other, the C word as well.
Yeah.
Women should not allow that to be done to themselves. They should run in spite of it.
Yeah, if a man does the same thing, very often they'll say, well, he's forceful. He's showing leadership. He's being assertive.
And if she's doing it, she's aggressive. So women are held to different standards than men, and they're very often discouraged by their own families. I lived with that for a while, but I could see what it was doing to me. I did not want to stop what I was doing in politics, so I decided for myself I didn't need to be held back by a man for any reason at all.
Good for you, Bonnie. And I want to let listeners know, by the way, that when we were talking earlier about reaching out to members of Congress, if you're not happy with what's going on there, if you go to our website at eastcountymagazine.org and you click on the Citizens Action button to get involved, it lists the contact information for all of the members of Congress. And if you don't know whose congressional district you're in, there's a link where you can look that up as well. Reach out. Let them hear from you. Whatever your views are, even if you disagree with what I'm saying.
Oh, sure.
Or what Bonnie is saying. It's your right as an American to speak your views, but if they don't know what you're thinking, then you may not like how they're voting.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I've talked with elected officials for many years. I've usually gotten them to agree with me, and I'll never forget. Years ago, I went with a group of people to visit my Congress member. We sought to get women's equality in the military, and he said, absolutely not. Well, I'm proud to say that now women can serve in all areas of the military, and they can become officers, they can fight for their country, literally. They are no longer sidelined, they can move up the ranks to general, and some women have. And I just hope the current Trump administration's misogyny does not reach into the military and deter women who want to serve their country in the military from doing so. It's your right. You should fight for it, and you should fight for your country if that's what you want to do.
Well, there you go. And again, you can go to Run Women Run, and if you're fired up and you want to run for office, I've always loved the slogan that a woman's place is in the House and the Senate.
And the Oval Office.
There you go. Well, hopefully one of these days, maybe we'll actually see the ultimate glass ceiling broken. Bonnie, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Do you have any final words for our listeners today as we're starting to run short on time?
Oh, I say get involved, women. And do it for yourself, do it for your daughters, do it for your granddaughters.
I want to thank you very much, Bonnie, for joining us today. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Bonnie Price. Bonnie is a longtime feminist. She's active in Run Women Run, which is a nonpartisan organization recruiting women for public office. She's also involved, as you've heard, in the East County Democrat Club as well. She's a longtime women's rights activist and participated in the historic Women's March. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much for having me.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a wonderful hike to chase away those winter blues, a musical gold rush event at Agua Caliente, Valentine's celebrations, and more.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including All That Jazz, a salute to local heroes, Black History Month events across East County, and the Run East County St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
County Parks invites you to come for a hike at Lake Marina and stay for a snake feed this Saturday, February 11th from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. This recurring event starts with a short ranger-led nature hike that intersects with the Pacific Crest Trail and ends with the feeding of states back at the ranger station. Meet at the end of the nature trail at the entrance to Lake Marina County Park. In rainy weather, the hike will be canceled, but the snake feed will still take place. For details on this and other County Park events, visit countynewscenter.com/events.
A musical gold rush event will be held at Agua Caliente County Park in Anza Borrego on February 11th from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Fiddler Celia Lally will perform a fast-paced show as she sings, acts, and plays instruments for the enjoyment of all ages. You'll also learn about the gold rush and local stagecoach routes through interpretive songs and stories. For details, visit countynewscenter.com/events.
The nonprofit Hearts for San Diego invites you to show some love by attending Cupid's Carouse, an annual tasting party on Saturday, February 11th at 7 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Center. Wines, beers, and spirits will be paired with Valentine's favorite foods and tasty sweets. Hearts for San Diego has helped raise funds for other nonprofit organizations helping veterans, special needs children, animals, and the environment. For tickets, visit heartsforsd.org.
Eastbound Bar and Grill in Lakeside is celebrating its 7th birthday with a party on February 11th. Special events start with a pajama brunch and continue throughout the day and evening with live music, charitable giving, and the notorious annual Beer Belly Contest. In honor of all of the love the community has shown the restaurant over the last 7 years, Eastbound will be holding a community fundraiser from 6 to 9 p.m., where 25% of all sales will go back to a Lakeside local who is recovering from a brain tumor. Afterwards, a DJ will play top hits until 1 a.m. For details, you can check eastboundbarandgrill.com.
Acoustic guitarist, singer, and songwriter Jim Earp will perform Hawaiian and Celtic guitar music, as well as folk rock songs at the San Pasqual Winery, Tasting Room, and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, February 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. For details, you can go to sanpasqualwinery.com.
How do you protect and preserve Anza Borrego Desert State Park, the largest state park in California? That's the job of the Anza Borrego Foundation celebrating its 50th anniversary this desert season. To kick off its golden anniversary, it's offering a free guided hike this Saturday and Sunday, February 11th and 12th, for new visitors to the park's most popular hiking trail. Borrego Palm Canyon is a family-friendly 3-mile hike known for its oversized palm tree grove and bighorn sheep sightings, culminating in a palm oasis and waterfall. Passes are limited and must be reserved in advance at the Anza Borrego Foundation's website.
If you're looking for some puppy love, over 100 dogs and puppies from local rescue groups will be at Grossmont Center looking for a loving home during the Cupids and Canines Pet Adoption event on February 12th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And if you find your perfect match, you can take your new furry friend home this Valentine's Day weekend. For more information, visit GrossmontCenter.com.
This Sunday, February 12th, you're invited to join Ranger Dave at the county's Heise Park in Julian for a one-hour hike on the beautiful Fern Trail. This easy-to-moderate one-mile hike culminates with the bubbling waters of Cedar Creek. Meet at the ranger station at 10:30 a.m. For more information, visit countynewscenter.com/events.
The Roundup Grill in Santa Isabel invites you to dance and dine with their Valentine on February 14th. Your feast by Chef John Little will be paired with wines from Ramona Ranch Winery, from bubbly to beef short ribs braised with Cabernet and chocolate to a surprise dessert. Live fiddle music by Celia will combine jazz and blues, Zydeco, and Celtic music for dancing the night away with your sweetheart. For tickets and details, visit RamonaRanch.com and click on What's the Buzz.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Gardening with nature, birds and butterflies and bats and bees will be the topic discussed by gardening expert Connie Beck at the La Mesa Beautiful annual meeting on February 19th at 4 p.m. The event will be held in Nankoots Cottage near the La Mesa Community Center. Beck has been an organic gardening instructor and landscape designer for the past 30 years. To RSVP and get more information, visit lamesabeautiful.org.
You're invited to don your Great Gatsby glam or cocktail attire for all that jazz. The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce's 9th annual Salute to Local Heroes. This year's event will be held on Wednesday, February 22nd from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Town and Country Resort and Convention Center's Golden Ballroom in Mission Valley. The Chamber will award local heroes from the La Mesa Police Department, Fire Department, paramedics, and retired police department volunteers. For tickets, you can visit lamesachamber.com.
In honor of Black History Month, Marlon Briscoe, the first starting African-American quarterback in the NFL, will be speaking at Grossmont College on his greatest lesson in life, persistence. The event will be held in Griffin Gate from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. on February 22nd. For a complete list of all Black History Month events at the Grossmont-Cuyamaca Community College District, visit gcccd.edu.
Karamu, a celebration of Black History Month, will be held February 25th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the County Library in Spring Valley. This event will include speakers, art, live entertainment, children's activities, and refreshments. For details, visit the San Diego County Library site at sdcl.org. This year's Run East County St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon will be held early on Sunday, March 5th. Wear green if you join in this fun and festive event, which includes not only the half marathon, but also a 5K run walk, a green mile, and a tribes and clans competition to involve the whole family in fun and fitness. The event is organized by the Run East County Foundation to raise funds benefiting several East County charities. To enter or volunteer, you can visit stpatricksdayhat.com.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.